case, Losa versus Mukasey. Ms. Sharma Crawford.
May it please the Court, my name is Rekha Sharma Crawford, and I represent the appellant in this matter. As a starting point, it is important to note that the Board of Immigration Appeals, in looking at the statute 212A9, indicated that it is plain and it is clear. And in fact, they do that about four times in their decision. They claim that the language of the statute is plain, and one time they indicate that the language of the statute is unambiguous. As a result, this Court must look at this statute and interpretation de novo.
But let me ask you this, though. I mean, you made that argument in your briefs, but it had always seemed to me that in asking the question whether, you know, or what step of Chevron analysis and the like one goes to, it's really up to this Court to look at the statute first and see if the statute from Congress directs us what to do. And I don't know why we would have to defer to the BIA's conclusion that the statute itself is clear. If we thought the statute was clear and they thought it was ambiguous, we'd say the statute was clear and we would follow what the statute said. By the same token, if they thought the statute was clear and we thought it was ambiguous, we might have a different problem. So why is it that we need to adopt as gospel their assessment of the clarity of the statute?
Well, Your Honor, we would admit, first of all, that this Court is not bound by that. And in fact, our position is, however, that the government has argued that this Court owes blanket Chevron deference to the Board's interpretation, and we would submit that's not correct. And in fact, if you look at the decision of Barraza versus Mukasey that came out of this circuit, the Court held that where the Board has indicated it is the plain meaning and then later changes it and says somehow it's ambiguous, that they cannot then change their position. And that's arguably what the government has done in this situation.
But let me just say, I mean, I know we don't have very much time. I find this a very complex case, actually. And there are ways of looking at really the two statutes we're talking about, 212A9B2 and 245I, that indicate they're a real muddle. And if they are a real muddle, then you would go to step two Chevron, I think, and you would defer to the Board. There are other ways of looking at these statutes where maybe parts of it are muddled, but in the final analysis, you come up against one reading that would read 245I out of the statute book altogether and another reading that preserves it. That's not the reading the Board took. So maybe we're certainly instructed not to assume that a statute is sitting there as just decoration in the books. We need to give it effect. So, but I'm really stuck on whether this is actually such a mess that we should just defer, or whether there are ways that would lead to relief for your client that are legitimately before us.
Your Honor, I think the problem is that under Barraza, I don't think that you can, at this point, once they have indicated that it is, in fact, a plain statute. Now, that's what the Board found. They say, we believe it's plain. I think at that point, this Court is free to make a de novo review, and that's what the Court should do, is look at it de novo to see is it, in fact, clear. Mm-hmm. And I think part of our issue, and I would agree with Your Honor, that this is somewhat of a complex matter. And when you look at it and you look at 212A9, I think that is why we've come back to say, well, you can't. The government's position is that you can selectively kind of look at this statute, take terms that are terms of art. Immigration law is an area that is clearly full of terms of art: departure, voluntary departure, admission, entry. All of those things are terms of art. And yet the Board wants this Court to simply say, well, you know, one word taken in this context means this, but doesn't necessarily mean this over here. And I think part of why we have indicated that you have to look at this, and we get that guidance from the Lopez decision from the Supreme Court that says look at the statute in its totality and how it's written. Now, they get one of the indications that we argued in our brief and we've argued to the board is to say, look, you have to take 212A9 in context with the provision that says aliens previously removed. And the reason for that is because it gives some – it makes sense in that regard. Otherwise, you do get this muddled mess of contradictory statements and contradictory resolutions.
But let's start there, because subpart 9 is captioned aliens previously removed, but then we come to subpart capital A, certain aliens previously removed. That sounds a little repetitive, but then you get to B, aliens unlawfully present. So they're talking about, they're somehow making a sub-distinction, and then within B, you wind up with this language that you focused on, somebody who's voluntarily departed or somebody who's been unlawfully present for a year or more and who again seeks admission. It's that word again that you focused on, implying that they sought admission at some other time.
That's correct, Judge. And one other point to that, of course, is that, you know, when you look at it and you say, okay, it's captioned aliens previously removed, what that indicates is that there's a record of what has occurred. Now, arguably,
how can you say that if you get to B and you see aliens unlawfully present and you see somebody has been unlawfully present? I'm looking at B-I, capital Roman numeral 2, has been unlawfully present for 1 year or more and who again seeks admission within 10 years of the date of such alien's departure or removal. That's where they say departure means you just left. Departure might mean you were kicked out. Departure might mean you just walked across the border or anything else.
Well, but again, the use of the word again indicates there's got to be some record. You seek admission. Admission is defined in the statute as a lawful entry. So there's some record there. Because arguably, if you take the government's position, then the problem becomes this. Let's say Mr. Lemus Loza, who entered in 1998, he leaves in 2000 and then returns in 2002. But if there was no record, as there is none here.
Well, he never sought admission in the sense that somebody who came as a tourist or somebody who came as a student or any other capacity, right?
That would be correct, Judge. But let's assume that he enters in 1998 and remains silent and doesn't and is not forthright with the board, is not forthright with the immigration judge, and never says, I left. There's no – for applications that are filed prior to January 14th of 98, which his was filed in 1992, there's no requirement to show physical presence. So arguably, if you accept the government's interpretation of the statute, what you're saying is that you're going to punish someone who is forthright with an immigration judge or with the agency. That cannot be Congress's intent.
The government says, I'm very uncomfortable with any theory that says, you know, we're encouraging people to lie and so on. That can't be the way we deal with our immigration laws, which we have enough problems with as it is. So it seems to me that we just need to read the statute, whatever the incentives may be. And I think in your favor, the notion of seeking admission is something that's interesting because he has never sought admission. That might be a gap in the statute for all I know. I wonder, I know you're running into your time, but I would like you to say a word or two about your alternative argument under 245I.
Well, Your Honor, we would indicate that 245I would cure, even if this does apply to him, then 245I would then cure that impediment for his adjustment. The reason for that, and the primary reason for that, is this. And in order to fully address it, what you have to look at is the timeline in which these statutes were created. So you have, in 1994, you have the original inception of 245I. April 1 of 1997 is the effective date of unlawful presence, this statute of 212A9. On January 14th, 1998, that was when IRA, when it was passed, it creates the sunset provision for January 14th. Now, what that indicates is that when, and then you have on under the Life Act, you have the date of April 30th, 2001, which has a requirement in it that on December, you must prove that you were physically present on December 21st of 2000. Now, what that, if you accept that there is, that it doesn't cure this unlawful presence issue, then the problem becomes is you've set up a statute that by itself fails. Because let's say you have someone who files an application on January 1 of 1999. Well, by virtue of the Life Act, we had to prove that they were physically present on December 21st of 2000, which would be clearly greater than a year. So now you've created the Life Act and given it no meaning just by the nature, and we have to assume that Congress understood that when they included 245I and did not expressly deal with this provision of 212A9. And so we would submit, Your Honor, that just looking at the chronology of the events gives weight to our argument. And I see I'm out of time.
Thank you, Ms. Sherman Crawford.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Connor.
May it please the Court, I am Blair O'Connor on behalf of the Attorney General. Your Honors, there are two issues present before this Court. First, is Mr. Losa inadmissible under Section 1182A9B? And second, assuming that he is inadmissible, can that be cured by an application for special adjustment under Section 1255I? Now, the government's position is that the Board resolved the first issue relying on the plain language of the statute, the inadmissibility statute. It is undisputed that Mr. Losa illegally entered the United States without inspection in 1998, resided unlawfully in the United States for 2 years, departed to Mexico in 2001, and then illegally reentered for a second time, again without admission or parole, in 2003.
So let me ask, is it the government's position that in subpart 9 or in some part of subpart 9, the word admission means any way that you got into the United States? In other words, it doesn't refer to the process whereby somebody is lawfully permitted to come into the United States.
We Your Honor, our position is that it is the latter,
so,
that someone,
so
but it applies in this case because after Mr. Lewis's second illegal reentry in 2003, he subsequently submitted an application for adjustment of status.
But that was only the first one. That wasn't again seeking admission. He had only sought admission once.
I understand, Your Honor. The Board noted in both Briones and I believe in the instant published decision that Congress's use of that word again was sort of probably a scrivener's error because...
I don't see why it would be, though, because it seems to me, and first, and, number one, and number two, I don't see where the Board has the authority to read words out of a statute. We're all stuck with Congress as it is, and I can think of many instances in which somebody, as I was just suggesting, seeks admission, then overstays, and is then unlawfully present after having lawfully sought admission, leaves, comes back in again seeks admission. So I can easily imagine a scenario. It happens all the time where somebody comes in on a tourist visa, they've presented themselves, they seek admission, but instead of leaving after 6 months, they wind up staying for 3 years, and then they go back home again for a while, and then they seek admission again. So capital B of subpart 9 certainly describes a significant number of cases. So where the Board is entitled to say, well, that word again just doesn't mean anything, I don't see it.
I guess the response to that would be, Your Honor, looking at other Board decisions that interpret the inadmissibility provision, 1182A9, specifically a matter of Rodarte, the Board notes that the unifying theme of that section, which is enacted by ARERA, was to make it more difficult for aliens with repeated immigration violations from lawfully seeking admission thereafter.
I understand that, but you have to say, I think, if that's where you want to go, that the word admission is not a term of art, that admission just means you walked in, because otherwise you just can't make capital B subpart I mean anything. I mean, I understand all about the board's policies. Maybe Congress needs to come back. I mean, this law certainly could stand a little bit of cleaning up and clarifying, as I'm sure you would agree, in many ways. And if that's what Congress wants to do, Congress is certainly entitled to do that. But I'm not sure that's what it's done in this statute.
Okay. Well, again, Your Honor, we're not aware of any court of appeals that has interpreted that word again in the fashion in which, you know, this court appears concerned.
The board
has repeatedly held that it applies, 212A9B applies to aliens like this, ones with multiple illegal entries without admission, and to then file the first application for adjustment, and that they're therefore inadmissible. And we would ask that this court defer to the board's interpretation that this alien is inadmissible under the language of the statute.
Right. Okay. I also wanted to talk to you briefly about the board's decision to equate capital C cases, aliens unlawfully present after previous immigration violations, with the capital B case that we have here, and then perhaps most importantly the 245I, since here's where I am afraid that what the board has done is it's essentially created a situation where the null set will be eligible for 245I relief. Nobody. That's the null set. Nobody.
Okay. Well, again, here we find it's important to look at the purposes for which 245I was created.
Can we start with the language of 245I?
Sure, Your Honor.
The adjustment of status of certain aliens physically present in the United States, notwithstanding A and C. If you're physically present and you enter the United States without inspection, that's Mr. Lemus Losa. And you are the beneficiary of one of these petitions, that's him, may apply for adjustment of status.
Yes, adjustment of status, special adjustment under 245I cures a one-time illegal reentry.
Where does it say one time?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Where are the words one time in the statute?
They're not, but the board has interpreted.
So the board is amending the statute. See, there's interpretation of a word, like the word departure. We're interpreting departure to mean any time you left, not just under order of an immigration judge. That's interpretation. Adding a whole clause seems to me to go beyond the boundaries.
Okay, let me back up, Judge Wood. Let me back up, Your Honor. Mr. Losa is not inadmissible for 245I because of his illegal entry in 2003. Conceivably, 245I would cure that. What he's inadmissible for, and the adjustment statute 245 does require the alien to be admissible in order to be eligible for adjustment. He's inadmissible for having the prior period of unlawful presence of a year or more and then seeking admission within 10 years of his departure.
Show me the language in 245I that says what you just said.
Yes, Your Honor. Under 245I A2, upon receiving the adjustment application, the Attorney General may adjust status if, under subsection A, the alien is eligible to receive.
Where are you reading? 245.
1255I.
Okay.
2.
Okay. Upon receipt of such an application,
the Attorney General may adjust status if the alien is eligible to receive an immigrant visa and is admissible to the United States for permanent residence. Well, if you go to 1182A9B. An alien with a prior period of unlawful presence of a year or longer who seeks admission within 10 years of his departure is inadmissible. And 245I does not.
That's where we get back to this again business. He's inadmissible within the 10 years if he's been unlawfully present for a year or more. But that would also account if it's his first time. If he comes in and it's within day 366 and forward.
No, Your Honor. In Rodarte, the board interpreted 245A9B as requiring the period of prior unlawful presence must accrue prior to the alien's departure. So if an alien accrues unlawful presence after a one-time illegal entry, then they're not inadmissible under 1182A9B.
I just don't see any of that in the statute. I mean, it's really the board is writing the law.
Again, Your Honor, we would know that the only court to specifically address matter of Briones is the sister circuit, the Sixth Circuit, which it did defer to the court's interpretation that aliens who are inadmissible as recidivist immigration offenders who have prior illegal entries and periods of unlawful presence prior to departure and a subsequent illegal reentry, that those are inadmissible under 1182A9 and Section 245I does not cure that. What 245I cures is the last, it cures a entry without inspection or admission. But it does not cure an alien who is a repeat immigration offender. And that is, as the Board held, the unitary theme of Section 1182A9.
And again, you're describing a policy that rational people might come up with. I just don't know if this statute comes up with the policy. I actually have no argument about whether that would be something we might want to do. But I don't see why somebody who's come into the United States unlawfully is admissible anyway for permanent residence.
Pardon me, Your Honor, what was your last question?
I don't understand why, if you have come into the United States unlawfully and you're physically present here, you're admissible for permanent residence.
Well, that is Section 1182.
Remove such people.
That is Section 1182A6. Again, an alien who enters without admission or parole is inadmissible, but 245I does cure that because, again, the language of 245I is that an alien who is present without admission or parole may nonetheless apply under the special adjustment provision. But it does not cure aliens who are inadmissible for other grounds, including recidivist immigration offenders. Again, we would just ask the Court to note that the purpose why 245I was created back in 1994, Congress recognized that the approximately 2.5 million illegal aliens who legalized under the amnesty provisions of the 1986 Act, that their relatives were in a tough position because they were present here in the United States, but they had to leave the country in order to apply for adjustment of status. So Congress passed that to encourage them to stay so they did not have to leave. It in no way intended to reward those who did leave and then illegally reentered a second time. That was never the purpose of 245I, and it wasn't the purpose for when it was extended into 1998 or 2001. That was only meant to cure one-time illegal reentrance, not subsequent recidivist immigration offenders. I know I'm out of time, but let me just sum up. Thank you, Your Honors. Again, because the alien clearly is inadmissible under the plain language of Section 1182A9B, and because the Board, this Court shouldn't give Chevron deference to the Board's interpretation that 245I does not cure that ground of inadmissibility, we would ask that the petition for review be denied. Thank you.
Chairman McCarver, your time has expired, but you may have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Your Honors, I would agree with the Court that this is an incredibly complex area. And when you look at 245I and you look at 212A9, the intent of the Life Act was to preserve families. And that's essentially what it was geared to do. Now, in the original passage of 245I, there's no continuous presence issue. In 1998, when the sunset provisions are created, there is no continuous presence requirement. It isn't until 2000 when not only do you not have to prove a continuous presence, you only have to prove presence on one day, which is December 21st of 2000. So in regards to that, I think the intent of this was clearly to address some of these bars to inadmissibility. Let me address very quickly the Sixth Circuit case that counsel spoke of. The Sixth Circuit Ramirez. In that case, what the court held is that first they found that inadmissibility, they kind of got confused and said, we don't really know why one admissibility is different from another inadmissibility. Inadmissibility is inadmissibility. And ultimately, the court found that the board had initially said that it was an ambiguous statute, not a clear statute, and so there was a question of Chevron deference in there. Secondly, they then remanded the case back to the board to see if there could be a nunk-pro-tunk I-212 issued in that matter that would cure the illegal reentry. And that issue at this point, of course, has not been brought back before the Sixth Circuit. So I would submit to you, Your Honors, that based on our brief, and we would rest on our briefs with regards to the issues of whether or not Mr. Lemus Loza actually is subject to 212A9, and if he is, whether or not 245I cures it. And we would submit that in this instance it should be remanded back and reversed.
Thank you, Ms. Sharma Crawford. Mr. O'Connor, thank you. And the case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.